Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Thursday, November 7th. I'm Lisa Music reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, wanted fugitive Joseph LaRue nabbed in Fortuna. Mendocino sheriffs attempt to identify young female victim of brutal dog attack and Yeehaw Commune flag for urgent health risks. Stay tuned for those stories and more coming right up. On November 5th, the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office announced the recent apprehension of wanted fugitive Joseph LaRue, age 38, from Redway. On November 3rd, around 10 a.m., deputies were dispatched to the 200 block of Orchard Lane near Fortuna after an anonymous tip suggested LaRue's location. HCSO coordinated with the Fortuna Police Department to apprehend LaRue, who had previously evaded law enforcement on two occasions. LaRue was wanted on several charges, including domestic violence, resisting arrest, child endangerment, possession of a firearm by a prohibited person, and making criminal threats. Upon contact with law enforcement, LaRue attempted to flee through a neighboring yard, prompting officers to use a non-lethal pepper ball for compliance. LaRue was eventually located, apprehended, and found in possession of more than 5 grams of methamphetamine. A further search of the scene revealed LaRue and his significant other, Katina Baker, had possession of a stolen vehicle. Inside the vehicle, officers discovered additional stolen property, including 12 firearms. LaRue was booked into the Humboldt County Correctional Facility on multiple charges. Katina Baker was cited and released at the scene for possession of a stolen vehicle. The Humboldt County Sheriff's Office thanks the public and assisting agencies, including the Fortuna Police Department, CAL FIRE, and the California Highway Patrol, for their cooperation. The case remains under investigation, and anyone with information related to this incident or other criminal activity is encouraged to call the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office at 707-445-7251 or the Crime Tip Line at 707-268-2539. Humboldt County's efforts to get the Yeehaw Communal Living Site into code compliance has reached a critical stage, with health officials calling for some immediate actions. Daniel Mentz reports.
Humboldt County health officials have told the Board of Supervisors conditions at the Yeehaw Commune in Trinidad pose urgent public health concerns, and there's doubt about how well they'll be addressed. Supervisors got an update on the situation at their November 5th meeting, with sewage discharge and drinking water safety topping what was described by Environmental Health Director Mario Calson as, quote, urgent risks to residents, to health, and to the environment. County Health Officer Candy Stockton said she has an obligation to flag the serious risk conditions at Yeehaw, including, quote, sewage contamination, foodborne and fecal contamination illnesses, and a number of other public health risks. Stockton said Yeehaw owner Charles Garth is, quote, making a profit from rents, which board chair Rex Bone also mentioned. Yeehaw residents view Garth as a benefactor, however, and the difficulty in balancing code enforcement against a dire need for housing was discussed in this exchange between Bone and Planning Director John Ford.
Somebody's making some money here.
Yeah,
and they can, you know, you can do whatever you want, but there's, if I do the math, somebody's been making some good money.
I think the struggle that we have is that there are people's lives who are affected by this, and we are, as sensitively as we possibly can, trying to deal with the situation where the site, for all intents and purposes, there is nothing that is permitted there. And it's questionable what could be permitted. And so it is painful to confront this tension that exists between disrupting people, as Dr. Stockton mentioned, and trying to bring a site into compliance. And we're trying to find a fine line there.
Last September, Garth was given 39 weeks to address code issues. An inspection last month noted the urgent sewage and water concerns, and an immediate requirement is to have two porta potties installed along with a hand washing station. Kalsen said that's just the bare minimum of what needs to be done. But as shown in this exchange between Garth and Bone, there's a delta between what the county wants done and what Garth believes should be done.
My septic is grade A septic, right? You know, that is, I can get a medal for how good it is. It's aerobic decomposition. These are not vault toilets. And that stuff, the septic on the ground, I'm proud of that septic on the ground.
Charles, what I'd like to address, I mean, and I'll talk to Mario about a medal for your toilet. But as we move forward, can we talk about what we're looking for? Is the financial responsibilities moving forward? Are you going to clean up the messes that don't deserve medals, bring in the porta potties, and address these issues going forward? Because if the next 5 years is going to be like the last 25, then we're wasting a lot of people's times. But there's going to be some financial effort on your part that has not really been made. You've gone and filed some paperwork. But you're going to have to jump up and say, yeah, I'm going to make this right, and I'm going to make this right in the next 34 weeks.
I'm all about making it right, but you need to step up and make it right, too. I have a settlement agreement saying you guys are going to expedite my permits. Nobody else gets that. Our community has that. No one else has, and especially consideration with the county, signed contract to expedite our permits.
Many residents of Yeehaw spoke during a public comment period and disagreed with the county's evaluations. One said the commune's composting toilet is, quote, the best thing I've ever seen in my life. And another said the problem isn't one of public safety, but, quote, a failure of regulations. Others said the county's deadline is inhumane and disrespectful, and that Yeehaw is actually a demonstration of how, quote, what we are doing is good for humanity. Garth now has 35 weeks to fix code issues. But Supervisor Mike Wilson questioned, quote, the capacity of this property owner to actually deal with this situation.
That capacity doesn't seem to be getting better, and I'm concerned about that. And it speaks to what happens if that capacity is in any way unable to move forward. I want to be clear. It's like if a person is having, you know, and I want to say, like, can our county do better to reach out to folks? Always. We always can be doing better. That's something we're working on iteratively, constantly trying to do that. But likewise, this is a situation with over 30 residents, over 20 build structures. It's complicated and not easy to deal with. And there has to be some understanding about the competency of the institution that is trying to do that, of the owner and the capacity of that. That I think that's relevant in this situation.
Yeehaw residents said one porta potty is at the site and another will be installed. But the code compliance of the commune's waterless toilet system is an issue that will remain, as Kalsen said a permit application for it has a number of problems and will be denied. A decision wasn't on the agenda, and supervisors voted only to accept the update and take heed of the updated requirements, which include applying for a zoning change designating the site for emergency housing. But Ford has said, even with that designation, Yeehaw's living structures and systems will have to meet code. And Bone said 35 weeks is a hard deadline, telling Garth, quote, there won't be an extension. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Metz.
Local credit union Vocality has announced plans to merge with Community First Credit Union, with the proposed merger contingent upon regulatory approvals from the National Credit Union Administration, the California Department of Financial Protection and Innovation, and a vote by Vocality members. If approved, the merger entity will operate under the Community First Credit Union name and charter, creating a cooperative with an estimated $965 million in assets and a membership of over 70,000, served across 12 branch locations. Pending final approval, Community First Credit Union and Vocality will continue to operate separately until the integration process is complete, which is expected in 2025. Leadership roles have been defined for the merged organization. Scott Johnson, current president and CEO of Community First, will serve as president and CEO of the combined credit union, while Pat Neighbors, president and CEO of Vocality, will assume the role of chief strategy officer. Commenting on the merger, Scott Johnson, president of Community First Credit Union, stated, quote, "Our shared vision is to provide an exceptional digital banking experience, greater convenience, and the innovative products and services our members expect." End quote. Pat Neighbors, CEO of Vocality, also noted the collaboration, saying, quote, "Together, we're combining decades of expertise and a mutual commitment to delivering the highest standards of service, access, and financial support," end quote. Additional information on the proposed merger is available at comfirstcu.com and vocalityccu.org. Turning to Mendocino, Election Day mix-ups and how Trump could change things for Republicans in Mendocino. KZYX's Elise Cox brings you the details.
In Tuesday's election, Mendocino County continued to work out the kinks of combining mail-in ballots and polling places. Echoing comments made at other polling places, Eric Hart, a judge at the Willits Community Center, said that the most notable bump in what was generally a smooth process was that voters did not realize that they were supposed to bring the ballot that they received in the mail to the polling place if they did not mail it in.
What have you seen today? Has it been slow?
No, it's actually been pretty steady all day. We get rushes and there have been a couple of slow points, but we're probably about twice the volume that we were last time, this time of year, or this time of day.
And what's notable about this particular election?
Of course, there's higher volume because it's a pretty contentious election, but also the new process of sending the mail-in ballots to everybody is a change for the voters and it's a change for the poll staff. So there's some adjustments in the process there. And because of that mail-in process, a big one is we're using a lot more provisional ballots because a lot of people are coming in to vote but have left their mail-in ballots at home. So when they do that, we have to give them a provisional just to make sure that they didn't use both ballots.
So you've been busy.
Yes, we have.
Have you had any problems?
So far, no. As far as stuff like electioneering or people causing disturbances, no. We've had a couple people come in who wanted to observe, and we have a process for that. We give them a little name tag. We give them some basic instructions about what they can and can't do. And they've been very peaceful. They kind of stand in the background and watch things. And it's usually about 15, 20 minutes, and then they're done.
While the polling places were lively, but not overwhelmed, there was a line out the door of the Office of the Registrar of Voters. Anita Brazil was one of the voters waiting online.
So you came here to vote?
To vote, yes, because I lost my ballot. I came in person to go to the polls.
And can you describe the scene here?
I feel like it's a lot of energy, a lot of people showing up to vote and, you know, give their choice and, you know, make their little impact.
The crowd included first-time voters who were celebrating their rite of passage. One woman who showed up with her little white dog, named Feo, described voting as a very big step for her.
Noten que llegamos, por ejemplo, yo llegué como residente y ahora ya ciudadana, pues es un paso muy, muy grande y se siente bien bonito. O sea,
he said it felt really good. The positive vibes were palpable at both the Democratic and Republican watch parties. During this watch party, we've seen Trump take a number of states, but the election is still undecided. We know it's highly contested. How are you feeling?
Well, we're feeling very hopeful that he is going to win.
Deb Hughes is chair of the Mendocino County Republican Party.
So the pundits and the bettors think that Trump is going to win the electoral vote as well as the popular vote. Not since the 1980s has a Republican taken both. So it'll be quite interesting to see.
And what will that mean for Republicans in Mendocino County? What did it mean for you guys when he was president?
We like cheap gas. We don't care about mean tweets. And we like low inflation, the fact that they're not printing money helter-skelter like they are now. And, you know, it was low unemployment for all people groups, Black, Hispanic. There was high employment. And people had more money in their pocket. We got tax cuts. Tariffs were high. Gee, I don't think they took away those tariffs. They said they are complaining about tariffs now, but they didn't take them away after Trump put them in place, so they're still enjoying that money. You know, it's... I am very concerned about World War III. We are dealing with several parties that don't like us. We are dealing with China, North Korea, Russia, and Iran. And she cannot negotiate with Putin or any of the others, even though Putin has endorsed her. Where's that Russia, Russia, Russia now, you know? But my concern is a World War III. If we get involved with any one of those actors, 1.4 million young men have signed up in North Korea to fight South Korea. They're a NATO country. And we will support, and so will other countries that are part of NATO, will support South Korea, and they draft our kids. The Democrats want to draft women. And if it hadn't been for the fact that three or four of the Democrats moved to the Republican side, it was thankfully not 50-50. 50-50 for the tips, that's what she did. She was the tiebreaker to tax the tips. And now, after Trump said no tax on tips, she said no tax on tips. But to get back to World War III, as soon as we get involved in one of these situations, even with North Korea sending 10,000 troops to Russia, and they're now fighting in Ukraine against the Ukrainians, then as soon as we get involved with one of these actors, the other two are going to dogpile, and then it's not even the end of it. There's 200,000 Chinese national men in our country. Where are they? Are they around our infrastructures? This is a big problem.
As we know today, other voters shared Hughes's concerns, and together they sent Trump to the White House for a second time. The nation is waiting to see what that means. And in Mendocino County, we are also waiting for the results of the local elections, which are very carefully and methodically being counted in full public view. You can read through the preliminary results on the kzyx.org website, and we'll have a story when the count is complete. For KZYX News, I'm Elise Cox.
The Mendocino County Sheriff's Office is urgently asking for the public's help to identify a woman who was critically injured in a brutal dog attack near Bear Pen Road, south of Piercy, yesterday, November 6th. Captain Quincy Cromer confirmed that the unidentified woman sustained, quote, major critical life-threatening injuries, consistent with an animal attack. Authorities are still searching for the dog involved, which has not yet been located. The incident was reported around 11:12 a.m., prompting a response from California Highway Patrol officers out of Garberville due to the area's remote location. Emergency responders from CAL FIRE, CHP, and medical personnel established an air ambulance landing zone near the Piercy Post Office, where the young woman who was struggling to breathe was airlifted to an out-of-county hospital. The Sheriff's Office is urging anyone with information or anyone who may have a missing loved one in the Bear Pen Road area to contact their dispatch line at 707-463-4086. Press option 1. At this time, it is believed that the victim is a female in her teens or a young female adult. More information will be provided as it becomes available. In state news, Suzanne Potter brings you details on California ballot measure results. The passage of Proposition 36 rolls back parts of Prop 47 and will put more people in jail, with less money going to programs to combat crime, according to criminal justice reform groups.
Advocates of criminal justice reform warn the passage of Proposition 36 will mean a sharp reduction in funds to anti-crime initiatives. The measure raises the penalties for certain drug and theft crimes, making more of them felonies that carry jail time. Will Matthews with the nonprofit Californians for Safety and Justice says voters were fed false promises that Prop 36 would reduce property crime by forcing more people to choose between treatment and incarceration.
It really was a disingenuous initiative that now will result in billions of dollars being diverted away from treating addiction, treating mental illness, and helping folks coming home from a period of incarceration.
Prop 36 repeals parts of Proposition 47, which funneled the savings from reduced prison costs into programs designed to combat poverty and addiction, the root causes of crime. Political science professor Christopher Hallenbrook with Cal State Dominguez Hills agrees that Prop 36 will cost the state hundreds of millions, money that will be diverted from anti-crime initiatives.
There's no way you can pass 36 and not put more people in jail. The more money you're spending on incarceration, the less money you're spending on other things. That is definitely an accurate assessment of Prop 36, and it seems to be one that voters decided they were okay with.
Prop 36 was largely funded by retail giants such as Home Depot, Target, and Walmart, hoping that the prospect of higher penalties will deter retail crime.
California ballot measures designed to raise the minimum wage and cap rents have failed, prompting speculation on what this will mean for low-income families.
California political analysts say inflation and voter confusion contributed to the failure of propositions to raise the minimum wage and allow stronger rent control. Proposition 33 would have allowed local governments to pass strict new rent control ordinances. Professor Christian Gross at the University of Southern California's Dornsife College and Price School of Public Policy says voters may have found the measure to be overly complex.
We did some polling on this back in September, and we found a lot of people were undecided. So I think it's a confusing initiative for a lot of voters, and so often when people aren't certain what the effects are going to be, they'll just vote no.
Opponents of Prop 33 argued that more rent control would discourage construction of new rental units, thus thwarting attempts to increase the supply of housing. Proposition 32 would have raised the minimum wage to $18 an hour for companies that have 26 or more employees, and to $17 an hour for smaller companies. Gross says the defeat is surprising, as California recently raised the minimum wage, but only for fast food workers.
I think with inflation, there's some concerns about raising minimum wage will then lead to increased costs. So people who traditionally would support minimum wage maybe are opposed. There have been increases in minimum wage, so that might have been in the back of people's minds as well.
Opponents of Prop 32 warned it would have hurt California businesses and led to an increase in the cost of goods and services. Keely O'Brien with the Western Center on Law and Poverty says Prop 32 would have helped the working poor at a time when poverty is the highest it has been in years.
In early 2023, 31% of California residents were either poor or near poor, and nearly 76% of poor Californians lived in families with at least one working adult. They're often working really hard, and they still don't have the resources that they need.
For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
In national news, what does a Trump presidency mean for U.S. climate policy? KPFA's Christina Onnestad reports.
The specter of a GOP trifecta, Donald Trump as president, Republican take back of the U.S. Senate, and control of the House could undo many of the national climate policies that are most reducing planet warming greenhouse gas emissions, according to climate solutions experts. Rob Jackson is a climate scientist at Stanford University. He says it could be disastrous.
As a climate scientist, the first administration was, I think it's fair to use a term like disastrous, at least in some ways. We withdrew from the Paris Accord as a nation, the only country to do that. The administration reversed dozens of rules that made our air and water cleaner, rolled back safeguards restricting mercury emissions from power plants. So I'm most worried about our air and water quality in the near term. And I'm worried about agencies that, you know, that track the health of the planet for the atmosphere and the oceans, like NOAA in particular, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration.
Anticipated rollbacks will come as more lives have been lost in heat waves. Record amounts of climate pollution are accumulating in the atmosphere. The U.S. has been hit with what may be two of its most expensive hurricanes this year. And nations, which will meet in Azerbaijan next week for climate negotiations, have failed to take strong action to change these realities. Zahra Ahmed is policy analyst with Carbon Direct. She says there's thousands of federal appointees Trump will make that could dismantle domestic climate policy.
Critically, and I think far less visibly, a raft of people will be slotted into key jobs on climate within the federal government as part of the 9,000 political appointees across all agencies. Personnel is policy. And while this is far less visible than things like withdrawing from the Paris Agreement, it is critical because these are the people who are going to operate the U.S. climate response and the energy transition, including the implementation moving forward of the Inflation Reduction Act and the bipartisan infrastructure law.
She says states will have the ability to enact their own climate policies. Trump has summed up his energy policy as drill, baby, drill, and pledged to dismantle what he calls Democrats' Green New Scam in favor of boosting production of fossil fuels like oil, natural gas, and coal, the main causes of climate change. He's vowed to end subsidies for wind power that were included in the landmark 2022 climate law, the Inflation Reduction Act. The main U.S. rule aimed at reducing climate change that comes from making electricity at power plants that burn coal is also considered vulnerable. This rule from the Environmental Protection Agency announced earlier this year in April would force many coal-fired plants to capture 90% of their carbon emissions or shut down within 8 years. It was projected to reduce roughly 1.3 billion metric tons of carbon dioxide through the year 2047. Industry groups in Republican-controlled states have filed legal challenges to a host of EPA rules, including this one. And Trump's victory could mean the Justice Department would be unlikely to defend it.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. And thanks to our reporters, Daniel Mintz, Elise Cox, and Christina Onnestead. KMUD News is online. You can find us on KMUD.org, SoundCloud, Instagram, and Facebook. That's where you can see stories, links, and videos. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Reporting from the KMUD studio in Redway, I'm Lisa Musick.